Blog Talk Radio.
A little surfer music, baby, a blast from your golden past.
Everything. I am your host, Chris Stevens. Hopefully you've had a fantastic, hopefully you're having a fantastic Tuesday because it's still 10 o'clock in the morning as I'm recording this. If this is your first time tuning in, All Subjects Everything is an internet interactive radio show. When we are live on the air, you can call in with a question or comment at 661-554-9194. You can also check us out in the Blog Talk Radio Network chat room, as a few of my esteemed listeners like to do from time to time. Or if you happen to follow along via Twitter, just use the All Subjects Everything hashtag. And remember, if you can't catch us live, we're available on iTunes. You go to the iTunes store, search for All Subjects Everything under podcast, download the shows for free. While you're there on the iTunes page, rate us from 1 star to 5 stars. Maybe write a little review. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to hear and see in future shows, and we will do our very best to accommodate you. And for you smartphone users, All Subjects Everything is available on the Stitcher mobile app. You can download Stitcher to your smartphone. Search for All Subjects Everything there. Take us with you in the car, the gym, the office, wherever you want to get in on the conversation. And don't forget to like our Facebook page, facebook.com/AllSubjectsEverything. There you will find show links, news and updates as to what we're working on, and soon we'll be rolling out poll topics and questions that you guys can answer, talk about amongst yourselves. We'll jump in every once in a while to, you know, just oversee the conversation, and that will help us develop a better show. Okay, so interesting couple of days in the WWE, and by interesting I mean they still don't have a clue what the hell they're going to do for WrestleMania. WWE Roadblock was a WWE Network special that took place on Saturday at a pretty much a house show in Toronto, and Dean Ambrose, of course, faced off against Triple H for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. Dean kind of sort of had the win, but his foot was under the rope, so which made it a legal pin. Of course, Triple H capitalizes, you know, wins, and holds on to the belt, which he's still slated to defend against the reluctant superstar Roman Reigns at a WrestleMania 32 in Arlington, Texas on April 3rd. So, you would think that the creative heads would call an audible after seeing the response that Ambrose got, you know, in challenging Triple H and, you know, threatening Brock Lesnar as he did on Monday night, on last night with a crowbar. And then it becomes even more of a, you know, awkward situation because one of the more popular athletes in history, WWE, Mick Foley, just happened to be on Raw. And instead of, you know, and he was telling Dean, you don't need a crowbar for WrestleMania 32, you need something special. So, of course, Mick hands over this box, you know, gift-wrapped. You know, Dean takes it off. And what is it? It's the legendary Cactus Jack barbed wire baseball bat. When you get a cosign like that from Mick Foley, you're so over, it doesn't even make sense. So you mean to tell me that you're going to stick with this whole thing of Lesnar being in a street fight, you know, against Ambrose, when Ambrose definitely took Triple H to the limit and he's got that popularity in his corner? It really doesn't serve Dean any purpose to get squashed at WrestleMania 32. Because I doubt very seriously they would write it where Brock drops to Dean Ambrose at WrestleMania 32 when he didn't even you know, when he was the guy that ended the Undertaker streak at WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans. Just doesn't make any sense to me. But it seems that they're, you know, going to go ahead and go on with this Roman Reigns thing. And Roman caught a break this week when he came back. He caught a break when he came back this week because Pittsburgh is the driest of all the Raw crowds. And there are some dreadful ones. Most of them are down south. You know, like in that, you know, like Alabama, Tennessee, some places, you know, some spots in Texas, usually Arizona, whatever, whatever. But Pittsburgh is one of the driest live TV show crowds ever for any wrestling event. Roman ain't going to be so lucky in the next 2 weeks. They're in Philadelphia next Monday, and then the Monday before, and then the Monday before WrestleMania, they're in Brooklyn. So this is going to get really awkward for WWE, especially next week in Philly. Because Philly, you know, and Philly is an Ambrose town anyway, because Dean used to wrestle for CZW there way back in the day when he was John Moxley. So Philly is an Ambrose town, always has been, probably always will be. So imagine the response when Dean comes out, you know, to, you know, give his, you know, calculated crazy spiel. And then, of course, you know, Roman Reigns' music hits, and all you're going to hear is boos. It's going to be really awkward to have your face, your guy, you know, climbing the mountain, get booed as he's trying to take down what is supposed to be the most despised person in the company. That's Triple H, and the head of the authority. I don't know what WWE is going to do with that. But I can tell you now, that might not even be the most awkward match of the evening when we get to April 3rd, because we still don't know. We still don't know why in the hell Shane McMahon versus The Undertaker in Hell in a Cell is even going on. We don't know. Why this match is going on, why Shane's back now. I mean, granted, you know, they needed something to pump the crowds up on Raw. And Shane McMahon interrupting Stephanie and Vince a couple of weeks ago was just that. Like that, like, when you heard Here Comes the Money, everything stopped. That was one of those great Monday Night Raw comebacks that happens every once in a blue moon. And, of course, you know, it had to be Shane. But Shane versus The Undertaker, that match is not going to be one for the record books. Because you have to think about it. Shane hasn't been in active competition in a decade. The Undertaker, on and off sporadically. But he'll be 51 next Friday. Yeah, he'll be 51 next Friday. So what you're telling me? What you're telling me is that The Undertaker, at 51 years old, Shane McMahon, who turned 46 in January, will give us a great match in Hell in a Cell? I don't think so. I don't think so. There has to be some other, you know, factors at play. And Taker last night says he's not doing Vince's bidding, which is weird considering the whole thing has been, you know, Taker is facing Shane to punish Shane for, you know, all the stuff he's done to Vince. So if The Undertaker wasn't doing Vince's bidding, why exactly would he agree to face Shane McMahon in Hell in a Cell? Talking from just a storyline perspective. We ain't even talking about just, like, you know, the backstage stuff, because none of it makes any sense. None of it makes any sense. There's nothing that makes a lick of sense about Shane McMahon, a non-active competitor, you know, who's been out of the company for years, been out of a wrestling ring for close to a decade, and of course, you know, there's nothing that makes sense about him facing the most recognizable figure in WWE history. And everybody's going to Everybody's going to jump on me and say, well, what about Hogan? What about Austin? What about Rock? Yeah, but those were – Hogan, despite his douchebaggery, set the stage for John Cena. Austin, probably the GOAT just from a character standpoint, because he was anti-authority. He lived that life, and he legitimately, you know, for everybody who ever wanted to knock the hell out of their boss, Steve Austin used to do it every week. And The Rock is one of the GOATs from a charisma standpoint, good-looking, physically gifted former football player. You know, he's translated that into a – parlayed that into a hell of an acting career. But The Undertaker, just from the standpoint of being The Undertaker, is the most recognizable figure in WWF, WWE history, in my humble opinion. Because before Taker came along, there wasn't many big guys that could do the stuff – that he does. That's why you get to see guys like Big Cass and NXT, or even to a lesser extent, you know, his storyline little brother, Kane. You know, you get to, you know, there weren't many 6'10 guys that were, you know, tight roping the top rope and jumping off of that. You didn't have guys doing suicide dives from inside the ring to outside on the floor. You didn't have, you know, flying clotheslines from 6'10, 320-pound guys until The Undertaker came along. From a physical standpoint, Taker revolutionized the game for big fellas. Him and one guy that we tend to forget a lot, which really kind of pisses me off, the late Scott Charles, call him Bam Bam Bigelow. If you think about it, the three big guys that single-handedly revolutionized how big guys wrestle in the ring and their athleticism, the top three go like this. One, The Undertaker. Two, Bam Bam Bigelow. And three, the guy who's finally getting in the Hall of Fame 12 years after his passing, the Big Boss Man. These were guys who were built like football players or basketball players, but could slide around the ring, run over the top ropes, and do all sorts of crazy stuff that were that's normally reserved for guys that are like 5'10 to 6'2 and about 215, 240 pounds in that range. These were big dudes doing all sorts of, you know, gymnastics inside the ring. Like Bam Bam Bigelow's first finisher was a slingshot splash over the top rope. And this was a dude that was 6'4" and 400 pounds legitimately. Like the first time I saw that, I was about 6 or 7 years old the first time I saw Bam Bam Bigelow wrestle. This is back when people cheered for Bam Bam Bigelow, if you can believe that. Once upon a time, Bam was actually a face. And you know, he would, you know, his manager at the time was some flamboyant cat named Sir Oliver Humperdinck, which is one of the funniest names ever. But whenever Bam would get introduced in the ring, this was before, you know, guys started walking to the ring when wrestlers were already in the ring. And, you know, it would usually be Howard Finkel. In this corner, from Asbury Park, New Jersey, weighing 398 pounds, Bam, Bam, Bigelow! And Bam would do a cartwheel. 6'4", 400 pounds, a straight up and down cartwheel. Couldn't believe it. And then he went ahead and did the slingshot splash where he would go outside, look around with that big skull, flaming skull tattoo on his hand. Crowd would go crazy. And he would just propel his big ass over the top rope and crush his opponent. One, two, three. Good night. Him, Undertaker, who I just mentioned, and Boss Man, 6'6", 330. One of my favorite Boss Man moves was, you know, he would, you know, get Irish whipped off the rope. You know, a guy would kind of, you know, set up for the back body drop. Boss Man would slide under him and hit him with an uppercut. That takes a lot of skill and athleticism to be moving that fast, moving that rate of speed and that size to get down, slide, come to a complete stop, and still have the breath and the stamina to reach up and knock the hell out of somebody with the right hand. Everybody thinks Goldust did that first. Nah, Big Boss Man did that first. So those are the three guys that changed the game from a physical standpoint. Undertaker, Boss Man, Bam Bam. Got off track there. Forgive me. But the Undertaker is definitely the most, you know, versatile big man, you know, and just the fact that a dead character, like a ghost, a apparition, if you will, you know, has lasted this long. Like, You would think that after 25 years of jumping out of caskets, getting knocked down and sitting back up like a zombie, people would get bored. But as soon as people hear that gong and the arena goes dark, people go apeshit. You can't beat that. I mean, I guess you could say the same thing about Hulk Hogan's guitar riff, Stone Cold's glass breaking, and if you smell that, yeah, you can say all of that. But The Undertaker changed the game, man. And why at 51 years old he wants to get in the ring with Shane McMahon has yet to be explained to me. None of it makes any sense. Nothing from WrestleMania right now that's main event status. The three matches I mentioned, Reigns versus Hunter, that's going to be awkward. Lesnar versus Ambrose. Ambrose belongs in the title picture, as does Lesnar. Taker versus Shane. Two old Bamas in a cell. Doesn't make any sense. WWE's got 19 days to figure it out, Jack. I don't know what they're going to do, you know, some last-minute toying with the storylines or what. But they got some work to do. Because this might be the least looked forward to WrestleMania across the board that any of us have ever seen. I mean, there's nothing that really jumps out. I mean, Ambrose versus Brock in a street fight, okay. You know, that's cool. I mean, you've got a lunatic going up against what JBL calls the most decorated combat athlete of all time, which is true. Which is true. Because they list Brock's accomplishments all the time. You know, Division I wrestling champion in Minnesota. The youngest WWE champion ever. You know, UFC champ. You know, he's kicked ass in Japan. And then you've got, of course, a wrestling lifer, a indie guy on the other side. You know, not really, you know, physically imposing, even though Dean is a rangy cat in the mold of, you know, Jake the Snake Roberts, or, you know, Scott Hall, those types. But, you know, and his offensive game really isn't just anything but him just, you know, making it up as he goes along, which probably endures him, probably, you know, endears him to people. Because, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's the scene of five moves of doom. It's not the Hogan big boot and the leg drop. It's not the finger point, you know. It's not the rock bottom or the people's elbow. Ambrose just makes the shit up as he goes along. And people love it. So, that match has some potential, but I just find it really weird that after Ambrose legitimately challenged Hunter and people were on board for this thing, that they just went ahead and said, okay, you know, we're going to stick with it as planned. Reigns versus Hunter at Mania, and Ambrose versus Brock. And Roman Reigns is, I honestly feel bad for dude. I really do. Because he's stuck between a rock and a hard place because Vince McMahon is intent on pushing him. You know, the internet wrestling community and the fans at large don't see it for him, even except for a select group of, you know, fans who, you know, appreciate his aesthetic, and I won't knock them for that, because wrestling is about looks. And Roman Reigns, by, you know, no shame or admission, is a very handsome dude and a very cut dude. So, you know, face of the company, you know. He's a guy that you could put in a suit or you can, you know, put in some, you know, relaxed clothes, you know, let him tie his hair back or let him wear his hair down or whatever, put that belt over his shoulder or around his waist and appear on Good Morning America or, you know, Sports Center or something like that. I mean, from a physical standpoint, you can't ask for a better, you know, representative for your company. But Reigns just lacks something with the fans, the true hardcore wrestling fans, that makes this whole thing about his rise to champion seem really, really awkward. And that's something that we're going to revisit as we get to Mania, as we go through Mania, and see where WWE goes from Mania. Because WrestleMania definitely, you know, is the signature event for WWE. This is their Super Bowl. This is their Grammys. This is their Oscars. This is their Tony Awards. You know, this is it for them. This is the big shebang bang. This is the real deal. And if they don't get it right, there's going to be a lot of second guessing from here on out. So, yeah, definitely looking forward to seeing what happens over the next 2 weeks leading up to WrestleMania, because WWE has some things to figure out. Will they? I don't know, but it'll be fun to talk about. That's for sure. Closing out today's show, 30 for 30. ESPN's great, documentary series 30 for 30 returned on Sunday. Selection Sunday, we didn't get a chance to talk about it yesterday because the brackets, were the main thing. But it was actually the 10-year anniversary of the lacrosse house party that, it resulted in rape charges for 3 athletes, the resignation of a coach, the canceling of the program, and Fantastic Lies was a great name for it because that was the wavering, quivering words of team captain Dave Evans after he had been charged in the rape, through DNA evidence. It was awkward. But it talked about a lot of different things. It didn't really give us a resolution for any of those things, but it talked about, Duke's disconnect from the community of Durham as a whole, the racial implications of black women sex workers versus white dude bro frat boys, and just the overall, implications of being charged with rape. And the overall implications of having your accusations fall flat. Here's the thing. I've always been one to venture to err on the side of the accuser. That's not going to change. If a woman says she's raped, 10 times out of 10, I'm going to believe her. That's just something you don't want to be that guy or that girl. I say that girl because a lot of women, sort of try to kiss up to men who really don't give a damn about them either one way or the other. Y'all need to stop that. Y'all need to stick together. Just a quick, note. But if a woman says she's raped, you've got to believe her until evidence or anything else says otherwise. Because that's not something people, take lightly. That's not something you can sit there and say, oh man, she bullshit, man. It's a joke, man. She lying. She like, no, because we've just seen the guy that they called America's favorite dad have 50 women. Not one. Yeah, let me get on my LeBron. Not one, not two, not three, not four, but 50. Over 50 women come forward and say that he drugged them, made them drowsy, and sexually assaulted them when they were out of it. 50. You can't women in good conscience or even, delusional. They don't make up rape charges. Rape charges are something that everybody takes very seriously and should. So that's takeaway number one from the documentary is that you always err on the side of the victim. You never want to be the person that says, are you making this up? What did you wear? Or maybe you had it coming. Maybe you teased them or something like that. Don't be that dude or that girl. Don't do it. But the interesting thing to me is that, you can't exactly, totally absolve these guys. Because they had, because even though it's 10 years old now, they had been known for their boorish behavior on campus for some time. So maybe this whole incident was just a matter of time in the making. Like it was just a perfect storm. But as it turned out, the district attorney, Mike Nifong, was an absolute joke. And he's, sulked away and been in exile and in shame ever since, which is where his stupid ass belongs. But there's still something to be said about, the privilege of young, spoiled, rich white athletes. They had, like someone told me on Twitter, they had the money to fight. If it had been a basketball team accused of rape, they would more than likely they wouldn't have the money to fight for it. Because lacrosse is a rich person's game. I'm gonna tell you straight up. I've covered lacrosse on a high school level for close to 10 years now, on and off. you know, when I was a full-time reporter, now that I'm back doing part-time for my local paper. And this isn't exactly, you know, the crowd that you see at basketball games or football games or even baseball games. Lacrosse parents pull up, you know, some, you know, baseball parents, they pull up in, you know, Dodge Caravans. Lacrosse parents pull up in Mercedes-Benz, G-Wagons, okay? That is the general disconnect between lacrosse and any other sport, is that you have that, is that that you have most, more often than not, your family got a little bread if you pay, if you play in lacrosse. And those kids at Duke were no different. So the overall documentary, I mean it was a stressful 2 hours to watch, because you never want to be the person that errs on the wrong side of things, but you definitely, you know, have to listen for everything. So, but Fantastic Lives was pretty good, you know, if you can handle that type of thing. But, you know, I just don't expect too many people to, you know, view it with a open lens, so to speak, even though they should. Because granted, while those guys, you know, are absolved of it, that still doesn't excuse the fact that, you know, this type of stuff happens every day, that rape happens every day, that privileged people get away with stuff every day. That doesn't, you know, change that one bit. And hopefully people will remember that, you know, as we go move forward from this documentary. But, you know, 10 years since, you know, the party, 10 years since the charges, you know, if you have time, if you have it on demand, or you get to catch it on a replay, Fantastic Lives, if you have 2 hours and you don't mind being uncomfortable, it's worth the watch. Definitely worth the watch. That being said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to this edition of All Subjects Everything. Greatly appreciate your time. If you missed us live, blogtalkradio.com/Chris Stevens on air, iTunes, All Subjects Everything, same thing for Stitcher Mobile. Tomorrow we will recap tonight's episode of the People versus OJ and the first two games of the first four in the NCAA tournament. So you guys enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, and until Wednesday morning, y'all be good or be good at it.